COTA just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your COTA fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with COTA. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
The internet's full of true crime podcasts. More and more are added to the list every day. Figuring out where to start or where to go next can be overwhelming. But have no fear, I'm here to help. I'm Bob Ruff, and this is the place to find your next true crime binge. I'm joined today by, of course, Erica Cantor, coming to us live from her closet. Hello. And from the land down under, Mr. Tim Elliott, who hosts a podcast that you might have listened to 2 days ago in our virtual time machine, because when this airs 2 days ago, your show will premiere. He's the host of Inside the Tribe. How you doing, Tim?
Yeah, good, Bob. How are you?
Good, really good. We've discussed before we turn the recorders on that when we record with someone in Australia, it's inconvenient for everyone. No one's happy. Tim's up past his bedtime. Erica's up before her wake time.
Yep, definitely.
No, I appreciate being here at whatever time, Bob and Erica. That's cool with me. Whatever time. It's good being here.
We appreciate it.
Very much so. So you referred to us by a former guest, Camille Bianchi. I always get her name. Is it Bianchi?
Yeah.
Is that pronounce it right?
Yeah.
She's the host of The Nurse. And she's part of your upcoming podcast, right? She's helping you with it in some way?
Yeah. Yeah. She basically is the co-writer and producer. She actually came over to the States for a while and for about 3 weeks and sort of scoped out a lot of stuff over there and visited community over there and found some people who'd been past members. And had a great time, yeah. So all very good for her. I was stuck in Sydney riding away. But no, she's been fantastic. She did an unreal podcast called The Nurse, yeah, which I think you dealt with her before, or you had her on your show before.
Yes, she was on. And The Nurse was phenomenal. Which again, listeners, if you haven't checked out The Nurse, check it out. Camille did a fantastic job there. So how do you guys know each other?
She, I work for the Sydney Morning Herald, and I write all sorts of stories. And she about con men, criminals, shysters, grifters, murderers, you know. And she had come across one of my stories from a while ago about a guy called Matt Klein who had escaped from a cult in 2000, and I wrote about this guy in 2007, Aussie guy, and he'd escaped from a cult called the 12 Tribes, which was super controlling, really sinister, kind of Amish-like group, but far more isolated and controlling. And anyway, Matt, this Aussie guy, had managed to escape, and I'd written a story about him. She'd seen that story and thought, well, wow, this would make a great podcast. So she got in touch with me and said, what do you think? Why don't we do a podcast on this?
Awesome. And then a podcast was born.
A podcast was born.
So you mentioned before we came on, so you're married. You have three children. Did I hear you say they're all daughters?
Three daughters, yeah, three daughters.
And how old are they?
How old are they? The oldest actually is turning 20 in March, which is pretty freaky. I cannot believe that's happened. Yeah. The other one is 16 and the other one is 14, just turned 14. So, yeah, it's pretty intense. Do you guys have kids?
I do. And I have a 16-year-old daughter and three boys. And I see now why it looks like you probably have in your background, maybe you have a go bag packed, like you're ready to bail out at any time. let's see your empty closet, which is hangers. Like at any time you're ready to dip.
Yeah, it's pretty. I can't believe you got three boys. How have you survived that? How old are the boys?
So I have a 22-year-old who just turned 22, and I have a 17-year-old about to turn 18, and an 11-year-old boy, all boys, and then the 16-year-old girl. So yeah, I'm you know, the lighting in here is really, really complimentary because there's a lot of gray going on up here that the light kind of drowns.
I got a haircut just today, and when you get a haircut at our age, and I looked around me and there were piles of silver hair on the floor, and I just thought, oh my God, what, every time I get a haircut now, it's like, really? You know, like, really? Is this seriously the person I am now?
I the same thing. So I work from home, so I generally look in a mirror maybe once a week. I have no reason to because I don't go anywhere. So when I go, I'll go get a same thing. I'll get a haircut, and I'm watching the hair fall onto my little apron they put on. I'm like, where's all that coming from?
And the really scary bit is when at the end they go, oh, do you want to see the back of your head? And they hold that mirror up so you can see the back. And the back is where it's all going on. All that gray is accumulated at the back of your head.
Yeah, the answer to that question is no. No, I don't
need to. Yeah, I don't. No, I can do without seeing that side of my head. Yeah, thanks. So the podcast has been a brilliant just a brilliant sort of distraction and a trip into an area of life that I had no idea, really. I mean, I reported on this group in 2007, and since then I caught up with them again in 2013 when another couple escaped and Matt, an Aussie couple, escaped, and their story was just out of control. They had been basically taken in, their minds had been twisted around and managed to be convinced themselves that they were terrible people, that they couldn't trust anybody, that basically distanced themselves from their families. They'd had a child in there, but then their relationship almost fell apart. They were kind of taught not to trust, you know, Mark, the husband, was taught not really to trust Rose, his wife. It was just so sinister what happened, and then they ended up getting shunted around the world by the group, flown all around the world, because the leaders of the group, the cult, believed that their family members were coming out to get them. So they panicked and just set them off on planes all around the world to try and escape. It was a bizarre story, absolutely bizarre.
The gaslighting that goes on, and some—I had never heard of this cult. I don't know how it could be because I don't pay attention to true crime at all. Other than the cases that I'm working on, that might be part of the reason why. but the 12 tribes cult—I had—I had never heard of it before. But you were just talking about, like, some of that, like, gaslighting that goes on. Did anybody? Did either of you watch the Peacock series, A Friend of the Family?
No. What's that?
There was also a documentary about the same case that came out a couple of year or two ago about the Jan Broberg kidnappings, where you haven't seen this, but it's this family. There was this guy that they were in the Mormon church, and there was this guy that was like a friend of their family that just kept manipulating this family, who then eventually like let him like keep taking their daughter. And he's Malay, like he took her to Mexico. He convinces this, at the beginning, 12-year-old girl, that she has to have a sexual relationship with him because aliens will vaporize her family if she doesn't, and that she can't touch her, you know, she can't touch her father or have a relationship with him. And it's like years of toy, and you're watching it like, how, like my wife and I were watching and we're like, you're 16 now. You don't know that the aliens are not going to, but it's insane. Like,
but the thing is the mind, the ability, especially if you've been, this group is what they call a teeth, hair and eyeballs group. So they've got you, every part of you they have control of. And when you join, I mean, it's interesting. A lot of people are like, well, why would you join a group like this? You know, what sort of idiot joins a cult? And it's like, well, nobody knowingly joins a cult. Yeah. It's not like you wake up in the morning and go, I'm gonna join a group that makes me surrender all my possessions and all my money and sign up for virtual slavery and to be manipulated and brainwashed and then treat my children like crap and then end up shunting me around the world to escape my family. It doesn't work like that. So these people joined a group that, in the case of the 12 tribes, that they believed was all about building a utopia, kind of bucolic, beautiful utopia where everybody worked together, they grew their own food, they have these lovely communities all around the world. And then slowly but surely, they get introduced slowly to the inner teachings. And the inner teachings are much more ritualistic, much more intense than the Disney side of the 12 tribes. When you rock up for, say, for a dinner or something, it all looks like a lot of fun. They're all playing music and the food's beautiful and all the kids are smiling and cheery. And it's kind of like, you know, 6 months to a year into that before they start kind of the indoctrination really switches on. And by that time, you're in. You've got, often cases, you've surrendered your, a lot of your money. You know, Mark and Rose, this couple we followed, they'd basically given the group most of their money. They'd given them their car. They had separated themselves from their family because they believed in the group so heavily. A lot of these people by, you know, not a long way in, like, you know, if you're thinking about leaving, say, after a couple of years, what's happened effectively is that you've lost contact with your birth family. You haven't worked in a legitimate business for ages. You haven't handled money because they don't allow their members to actually handle money. You might not even have a phone plan anymore or know how to rent a house anymore because you've been living in a commune kind of setup. Mm-hmm. So if you suddenly decide to leave, it's like, what are you running to? What are you leaving for? So in often cases, people decide to stay more because they're more afraid of what's waiting for them on the outside and what they'll have to confront, you know, getting their lives together, than they know what, you know, the certainty of being a part of a group that, you know, even though that group is really malignant and a bad thing. So it's psychologically, it's fascinating. That's part of why I find it so interesting.
It's very similar to, like, the coercive control you see in an abusive relationship.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Partner. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like, exactly, they isolate you away from your support network and they just get you to a place where, and then people from the outside looking in are like, you know, like in the example of like a relationship, you're just from the outside looking in, like, why would you stay with that person?
Exactly.
Look at the horrible things they're doing.
Right.
And it doesn't make any sense, but it's just mind manipulation and coercive control.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right here, right
now. Yeah, I mean, this is why I get really frustrated with people. Like, I was talking to my brother the other day. He's like, what sort of idiot would join this group? Like, why would you do that, you know? And it's like, you would never say that to a woman in an abusive relationship. You never say, God, you're an idiot. Why did you sign up? Why did you marry that guy? Why are you going out with that guy? And it's because it's a slow process of vulnerability. You get to, you find yourself in a really vulnerable space and then you get taken advantage of and you're not the person you were. And it's, you know, it's just not as simple as saying leave or, you know, chastising someone for becoming a part of the group. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like the isolation is such a big part of it. And like,
yeah, huge
part. They literally have it down to a science of how they can brainwash people or deprogram them by depriving them of all of these things. You know,
it's fascinating.
It's kind of scary. And yeah, but yeah, this, exactly.
It's amazing. This group, I mean, when I first heard about this group, it never fails to blow me out. When on their property outside of Sydney, and it's the same with their properties around the world, they essentially don't listen to the radio, they don't watch TV, they don't read newspapers or magazines, they don't allow their children to read books that aren't approved and printed on site, they homeschool. They are very rarely allowed outside the community other than to work in their own businesses. So it's not like they're just sort of let free for the day, very rarely. It's so after a while, you're living by their rules all the time and you don't even know it. You're being cooked really slowly in this world of total indoctrination. Yeah. And it's very clever the way they do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you said like the slow cook. It's a slow burn. They take away little bits at a time and manipulate little bits at a time till you get to a place where you can't get out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is really really touching thing about the couple we follow is that when they're so in love, you know, when we talk to them. Even I first met them in 2013, just after they'd got out, right? And they were really damaged. But then we hooked up with them again to follow their story, you know, earlier this year when we started the podcast. And they were just as in love as they were when I first met them. And indeed, just as in love as when they said, you know, when we joined this cult, we were so in love and we had this beautiful little family and we went inside to this community, which we thought would be great. And before long, we found that we were informing on one another to the elders, you know, like Rose would think, God, why isn't Mark pious enough? Why isn't Mark following the rules hard enough? Why isn't Mark beating our children enough? Because that's one of their central tenets, mm-hmm. really strict child discipline. So, you know, and Mark would be looking at Rose thinking, why does Rose not, you know, pray loud enough at the gatherings? And so they'd be informing on one another. And for a couple that was so in love, you know, they just said it was so, years later, I looked back and thought, what became of us? What happened inside that group? Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When Camille came to you about making the podcast, so your background is in print, right? I mean, you are, as you mentioned, you're an award-winning journalist. You didn't mention that, but I'll mention that.
I write stories. I'm a print journalist, so I work for a magazine called Good Weekend, which is basically like the Sydney Morning Herald Saturday magazine. So it's big, long pieces, about sort of 4,000, 5,000 words long. So you really get to unpack someone's story and, you know, really fine sort of granular look at someone's life and their situation. So it was perfect, a perfect way to explore the cult, because it's just the minutiae of these people, you know, the little details about how they run the group, and it's fascinating.
Yeah. And so when she came to you, because you've also written a book, couple books, you wrote the Bolivian Times, which you published in 2001, and you wrote a memoir called Farewell to Father. So coming from the print world, how did you have any hesitation in moving into the audio space, or was it a smooth transition?
No, I was terrified. I can barely operate my car, let alone operate, you know, the kind of I'm a techno moron. I've got no idea. I relied a lot on Camille to say, look, this is, you know, she introduced me to all the kind of all these different programs like Zencastr and et cetera, et cetera. But really it was the conventions of podcasting, like, you know, how things should sound and how you write in a different way. Writing for podcasts is really interesting because it's much more broad brushstrokes. You have to be much more much punchier. You know, the way you write, you can't, you know, features, you can, you know, not ramble, but you can explore things in a lot of depth and have a lot more nuance, I guess. But in podcasting, you let the subjects do a lot of the talking, right? So we've got a lot of people, like 50, 60 people we talk to for this pod, and they've all got their own stories to tell and they're incredible stories. And so you just let them tell the, let them drive the narrative, I reckon. That's the way we really played it.
And so let's talk about the cult itself. So it's called the 12 Tribes, and it's based on the Old Testament or Torah stories of there being 12 tribes in geographic regions throughout the world. And so, but this was started like in the 1970s.
Yeah.
Someone decided we needed to go back to the first century church and go back to that.
Yeah, it was started by a guy called Eugene Spriggs in Chattanooga in Tennessee in 1972. And Spriggs was a tall, charismatic, good-looking, rugged kind of football star. He'd played good football at school, at college. He'd dropped out to join the army. He then became a manager of a carpet factory. Then he worked at a fun fair, you know, like a fun fair, running one of the rides. Then he got married three times, divorced three times. Big character, lived a big life. And then, and that was all before he was 32, his 32nd birthday. And then he basically had a bit of a nervous breakdown. He was already a big believer in Jesus, brought up in the church, but he had a breakdown and he had a moment where he believed God spoke to him and told him he had to form a new church. So he basically started preaching on the street, really, in Chattanooga, and gathered a bunch of young disciples around him via pretty much his charisma. And he formed an unusual idea of what the Bible meant and what Christianity meant to him. And like you say, it was basically that he lost faith with the church, the established church and modern day religion, and he wanted to take Christianity back, way back to the first century after Christ, when you had a bunch of people essentially walking around the desert, talking to one another about God and getting in communion and just beginning to form the rudiments of a church, a Christian church. But they had very little. They had nothing. They didn't have a sort of a Bible to cling to. They had nothing really. They were just making it up, but they were very committed. It was a very lean sort of setup, obviously. And so Eugene was really attracted to this because it was stripped right back and it was just raw belief. And so he was really attracted to their commitment, I think. And that's what he wanted to turn his church into as well. So not surprisingly, the church became fairly fundamental. It got really back into a place where it was his word and his word only. He became pretty much a messianic figure.
Yeah, that's great. And then he did eventually spread it. He tried to get the church going in Tennessee, and then they ended up moving to Vermont, and then eventually it did grow across the globe, right?
Yeah, so he basically got thrown out of various. He got thrown out of Chattanooga because he started getting a reputation for several things. One of them was a reputation for playing pretty fast and loose with labor regulations. So he'd get a lot of his young acolytes to work for him in his businesses. He started all these different businesses, and he'd have his young disciples working for him for no money. But he then he also started preaching in the streets. He got accused of running a cult, after a while. People became scared that he was, his influence was too didactic, too intense, that he was taking advantage of people. So then he got kind of run out of Chattanooga and took his group, took his flock kind of all over the place, actually, and ended up in Vermont, then North Carolina. Yeah, so just the story of him is an insane story, actually. It's amazing.
Yeah, so in the podcast, which is, again, so this is going to air on the 30th. The podcast is launching on the 28th,
yeah.
What's the approach you take in the podcast to tell the story?
Okay, so it's a fairly straight-up narrative, and it's the most touching thing we found was Mark and Rose, this Aussie couple that got involved in Sydney, in the cult in Sydney in the mid to late 90s, spent 13 years in the group, and their journey through the cult was just hair-raising and remarkable, and it's a story of survival that kind of boggles the mind. So the podcast follows them in their journey. They sign up, they join, they think it's great. Stuff goes pretty off the rails pretty quickly, the podcast really just follows them through their journey as things get crazier and crazier. And then also there's, you know, we have kind of the breakout episodes here and there where you learn about what the tribes is all about, what their theology is all about, who's Eugene Spriggs, his wife Marsha, who's she? So we explore all of that. We explore their businesses. They've got a lot of businesses all around the world. They make lots of money. So there's just so much to fit in. I mean, we have 9 episodes. We probably have another probably have another 9 episodes in us. Although energy wise, I'm not sure I could do it. But so that's the approach we took. You know, like just filling. It's story. It's just the story is incredibly rich. You know, I just love telling it.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Is the cult still operating today?
Oh yeah. It's in Sydney, it's in Brazil, it's in Argentina, it's in Germany, Spain, the States. Like, yeah, it's not numerically, it's actually quite a small group. I think it's only about 4,000 people, but it's just like mind-boggling the intense amount of the command they have over the sway, the psychic sway they have over their followers, their members. It's quite unlike, and I've looked at quite a few cults and I've written about religion and looked at con men and the way they manipulate people. And I'm just totally in awe of how this group manages to convince their members to do what they do. It's quite beyond me.
Now, they've had their share of legal troubles, right, where places around the world have tried to maybe not shut them down, but I know there was in Vermont at one point, there were 112 children that were taken from the group but then given right back to them. Has there been a lot of legal trouble they faced throughout the years?
Yeah. One of the Island Pond raid was a big, big deal. That was kind of like a bit of a watershed moment. They had their main headquarters in Island Pond in Vermont, and there had been rumors in the early 80s that there was odd stuff going on, child abuse, really bad child abuse. I'm talking about severely hitting children, sexual abuse, homeschooling, sickness, but really terrible diets in the communities. So there's all this bad stuff getting back to the cops. Now, the cops raided after a while, finally raided the community in 82, and Vermont Social Services went in there, guns blazing kind of thing, took about 150 kids, I think it was. I can't remember the number, but took them out. There was 90, that's right, 90 state troopers and 50 social service workers. It was a massive raid. So they took 112 kids out. Then a big legal case happened. They had to try and get their kids back, eventually got them back. But this pattern's been repeated all over the world. So in Germany, exactly the same thing happened. The cops discovered that they were being beaten. There was child abuse happening on the compound. They went in, they grabbed heaps of children, said, no, it's not going to happen. The parents fought them for years to get the kids back, and it's a really fraught issue, you know. So they've been investigated for drug trafficking, for labor violations, you name it. They're being investigated currently in Australia for hiding basically there's a lot of stillbirths that go on. It's like dead babies get born in the community mm-hmm. because their diet's so poor. In Australia, it came to light that just recently, and this is one of the jumping off points for our podcast, that they had been burying stillborn babies on their farms, right, without telling the authorities and without registering the baby's deaths. So they've just been going up into the hills, digging a hole and putting the dead babies in there. And indeed, Mark, the guy, one of the Mark and Rose had had a stillborn child in Sydney. And Mark had been forced to bury that baby in the bush. And so that for them was just a traumatic experience. So the cops currently are looking at that. And they won't talk to us. There's it's called Operation Nanagai. They've raided the 12 Tribes compound here in Sydney. They have dug up a lot of land in their farms. They've found bones, but the investigation's still ongoing. I know they've found bones because we've reported on it. It's been reported on here, but the cops just won't tell me anything else. Totally stonewall me basically and say, oh, investigation's still going. It's still going. It's very frustrating. So, yeah, this group's been, in the sights of authorities all over the world.
Yeah, that investigation by the New South Wales Police started in 2020. And the year before that, here in the States, the FBI did an investigation. Says they released information about all kinds of bizarre allegations, like the suspicious death, suspicious deaths in odd spiritual rituals, but still they're still operating. Did you face any kind of pushback from anyone in the group when you were reporting on this cult through print media?
No. You know what's really interesting about this group? And it really speaks to how isolated they are and how intense they are in their beliefs. It's they don't want to. They believe that, you know, newspapers, outside media are all pretty much of the devil, right? They're the devil's making. Mm-hmm. So they won't even. It's very rare for them to respond. If you send them a letter, you know, with a list of questions, they barely. You know, we didn't. For example, we sent a massive list of questions to the headquarters in in Hidden Nut, North Carolina. They never got back to us. They're just not in the business of replying to journalists. They don't believe it's that journalists really matter. It's what's coming next in the next world that matters. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's another typical. It's kind of like Kim Jong-un in North Korea. Yeah. Like the people can't listen to any kind of media, but he surely is listening
to exactly.
everything that's going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was.
I'll be interested to see if you have any kind of, if you get any kind of feedback from this when the podcast launches, because it's going to all of a sudden go out on a much more global scale than the print media that you've done on the
time. Oh, yeah, I think it will. That's the nature of podcasts, isn't it? I mean, the reach, I just, you know, like the reach is incredible. So I'm looking forward to, yes, looking forward to seeing what comes forward, what comes out of it all. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more stuff out there.
My guess is you end up with another season on the same case, because although the people in the group likely won't hear the podcast, I bet family members of people who are in the cult will be listening and will have some stories.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. They, and it was interesting, you know, getting the really tricky bit is to get people who have relatives in the cult to talk to you. So for instance, Matt Klein, another Aussie guy who was a member and who got shunted off to Canada at one stage to work in one of the cult's factories over there. His mum was, for the years that he was in there, terrified of speaking out against the cult to anybody, whether it be, you know, a journalist or anybody really, and saying anything bad about them, because if it got back to the leaders, they just shut off contact. They just say, mm-hmm. they just cut you off. Nah, won't tell you where your son's gone. Move your son and their family around the world. Don't tell you where they are. And that's it. You don't see them again. And so, you know, mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers of people who are in the cult are terrified of saying anything out of order, speaking out of turn. That was one of the saddest things as well.
Yeah, that's crazy. So the podcast will, once this airs, will have launched on November 28th. So what is the plan? Are you releasing episodes weekly, or are you releasing them all at once, or what's the plan for release?
I think the plan is to release the first two in like together, so people can get a good old hit of the show up front, and then it's every week after that, I believe.
Okay. So listeners, check it out on the first two episodes are already available. His name is Tim Elliott. The podcast is called Inside the Tribe. It's one of the rare opportunities we have to catch up in real time. You can check out episodes 1 and 2 right now and then follow along the journey. Sounds like you have 7 more episodes to go for at least this series on the 12 tribes.
Oh yeah. There's the, you know, and like, yeah, 7 more episodes after the first 2. Yeah. And, yeah, I just think we're already compiling stuff for another bunch of episodes for sure.
Awesome. Well, check it out, people. It could be your next big true crime binge. And Tim, thank you so much for joining us at midnight. I'm sure those girls have you wore out, and it's way past your bedtime. And Eric and I need more coffee.
Yes, I'm gonna go and pass out now. Hey, thanks so much, guys, for having me on. It's just a brilliant opportunity.
We appreciate you coming on, and good luck with the show.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Crime Binge is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Audioboom. Produced and edited by Kelly Behrens-Brink, our production manager and co-host is Erica Cantor. Music and show artwork was created by Shane Yoder of PutThemInASong.com, and episode artwork is created by John Hayes. Our website, TrueCrimeBinge.com, was created by Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com. If you're a listener and would like to recommend a future guest or a podcaster that would like to request an interview, you can do so right on our website. And again, that web address is truecrimebinge.com. If you're enjoying the show, please do me a huge favor and take a minute to rate and review us on iTunes or whatever platform you're using to listen. Make sure you give us a follow on social media. We can be found everywhere at True Crime Binge. And thank you so much for listening. And make sure you tune in next Wednesday morning for another podcaster, another case, and another True Crime Binge. Thank you.
COTA just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your COTA fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with COTA. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.